Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Nicholas Johnson, who was a commissioner on the Federal Communications Commission from 1996 to 1973. He's the author of How to Talk Back to Your Television Set and Your Second Priority, A Former FCC Commissioner Speaks Out. He currently teaches at the University of Iowa College of Law. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nicholas Johnson.
Thank you, Ian.
Clearly, the testimony before the United Kingdom House of Commons Culture Committee by Rupert Murdoch, his son James, and the head of News International, Rebecca Brooks, resulted, I think, in the notion that people in charge, in particular the man in charge, simply doesn't know what's going on under him, and he's therefore not responsible. And in many ways, his defense was, my media empire is so big that I don't have time to deal with these small subsidiaries like his biggest circulation newspaper, News of the World. So that indicates to me that he's actually making a case that he is too big to fail, to use the banking analogy.
Well, yes, that's the way I would characterize it. When the bankers were saying we should give them billions or trillions of dollars, my reaction was, well, if it's too big to fail, it's too big to exist, and we ought to simply break it up. And I would say the same thing for a media conglomerate the size of something that the Murdochs have. If it's too big for them to be informed about this kind of event, too big for them to keep track of what's going on, I would say it's too big, and that it ought to be broken up. There are a lot of other reasons for breaking up media monopolies, if you can ever get the political ability to do so. But they're so doggone powerful and hold so much sway over the politicians, which was part of the problem in Great Britain, that and the same thing's true here, that it's often very difficult to do the right thing.
Well, but it's also pretty hard to believe that defense, frankly, or at least it's extremely convenient. And furthermore, who's responsible for the corporate culture but the people at the top? And clearly what was going on in England and in the tabloids in general that Murdoch owns around the world, and even here on Fox News, is a kind of no-holds-barred, you know, political bullying, intimidation. I mean, half of the candidates running for president on the Republican side up until recently already had contracts with Fox News. So it's not as if this culture is not being set by somebody.
Oh, sure. I think that folks find out pretty quickly what it is the boss wants.
And when you were on the FCC, it clearly wasn't as bad as it is now. But then I have to think back to the days of Colonel McCormick in the 30s, where he had a kind of used his media power as a kind of jihad against FDR. It's not uncommon for media moguls in this country to throw their weight around politically and make or break politicians. But has it gotten demonstrably worse?
Well, the bigger it gets, the worse it gets, because what we're talking about is a major source of power in a political system where the candidate has to get reelected and takes money from the special interests. But why do they have to take that money? Because they have to buy television time. And what it is they are buying with the money that is corrupting them is something that the media owner doesn't have to give money. It's something the media owner can give for free. They can provide favorable coverage to their favorite candidate and do them a lot of good that otherwise is going to cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign treasury.
Well, clearly, media moguls are the beneficiaries of our broken political system, as you've just pointed out. Most of the money that politicians raise and sell their souls for goes directly to television monopolies during campaign season. And you better believe we're going to be seeing billions spent soon and certainly throughout the next year. And I take it, as was evidenced in some of the hearings in London, that it actually has the effect of politicians paying fealty to media barons. Whether they want it or not, politicians have become supplicants to these powerful people.
Yes, but to power of any kind. And one of the most important sources of power from the standpoint of somebody who, for some reason unbeknownst to me, wants to actually be reelected. You know, if the whole purpose in life is to keep your job, you're not necessarily going to do a very good job when it requires making some tough calls, as we're now seeing in this country. So a principal source of power are the media barons, and then the other is the special interest money. And you combine those, month, and you get what we're now seeing in Washington.
Well, you also have to add into that, into the mix, the fact that the Supreme Court has just opened the floodgates of unlimited corporate money and union money, which is by no means comparable. And we are now truly immersed in money-driven politics. So from your position as having been an FCC commissioner, where do we stand in terms of the public good versus the private interest? I mean, where's the pushback? Who's standing up for the citizen?
Well, I don't hear a lot. I mean, we had a public interest movement back in the 60s when I was on the commission, and you did have pushback, and you had an FCC that would occasionally consider holding a license renewal hearing. But now citizens, and I knew about a citizens group that put a lot of time and effort and their own money into putting together a very forceful presentation on why a station should not have its license renewed. This was recently. This was not when I was on the commission. And they couldn't even get the commission to acknowledge that they'd received their petition. I mean, they wouldn't even answer their mail, let alone deal with the petition in a meaningful way. So we're in bad shape. It's not so much a question of where we stand, but where is it we're going to end up having fallen once we fall.
And of course, there was the recent shameful example of the FCC commissioner who, in a revolving door that was spinning out of control, she went straight from the FCC to head up with a big job with Comcast. And of course, Comcast was just allowed to buy NBC while she was sitting on the commission. So it's pretty difficult not to connect the dots there. But again, you know, I'm sure we don't want to depress our listeners too much, Nicholas Johnson. And
we would like for them to wake up, however, and do what they can as citizens with the limited amount of freedom and influence that they still have in the political process to say something, get informed, and contact their representatives and senators and get out there in March if they think that'll do some good, and you do some creative. You're in California, aren't you, Ian?
That's right, and
creative folks out there that know how to write and perform songs and put themes into television shows and whatnot. That's a source of power too, and it can be used on the people's behalf instead of to suppress them and drive us further into third world status.
Well, Nicholas Johnson, what about alternative media? Because I'm effectively, I wish I was more effective, but I'm a part of the alternative media, and you know, we're not corporate controlled. We do depend upon money to some extent from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and as you know, the Republicans in the House are trying to shut down all funding, particularly shut down the CPB. But on the other hand, you know, there's about 1,000 college and community stations across this country, and I'm wondering what it will take to infuse and generate an alternative people's media, because the commercial forces and monopolies have taken over almost everything. And well, to my mind, you know, Nixon set up the public broadcasting to fail, and PBS now is more and more looking over their shoulder and looking for corporate sponsors, and they run advertising, making them indistinguishable from commercial television. NPR is looking over its shoulder, being attacked all the time. So there's not much left on the spectrum, except, to my mind, a few stations like the one that I'm on here. Do you think that there's any way to get the people's band organized and become a force against this tremendous kind of commercial juggernaut, which is largely pro-corporate and very right-wing in its political agenda?
Well, it's tough in a country where people are willing to vote against their own best interests because they've been informed or deceived, depending upon your point of view, with regard to issues that they believe they care about. But I think one area of hope, perhaps, is what the internet and the other social media and so forth have had some impact. I mean, when you can put a petition out and overnight come up with 50,000 signatures, that's a kind of power that we didn't have in the past. And even politicians who can use social media effectively, if you get somebody who will take a public stand, like Dennis Kucinich and Bernie Sanders, Senator from Vermont, so forth. You got a smattering of folks like that, and they send out emails to their people. And they have web pages and They use Twitter and so forth. So there's that communications alternative that's available now.
Again, I'm speaking with former FCC Commissioner Nicholas Johnson, going back to Murdoch, just in the sense that, you know, he and his, particularly his son James, who testified with him, who did most of the talking, as a matter of fact, he has been outspoken in his denunciation of the BBC, and Murdoch would like to break the BBC. And I guess over here, since he's one of America's media moguls as well, it seems to me that even though you've got Fox as the number one cable news station, Limbaugh and all of his clones dominate commercial radio, and the big networks control network news, etc., why do they want to get rid of what's left, in other words, which is clearly the agenda in the current amongst the current House Republicans? Don't you think it's a bit greedy? They want to own the whole pie?
It's worse than greedy. If all it was greedy, you know, you could deal with it in those terms. But it's one thing to use what is supposed to serve the public interest as an instrument of unrelieved propaganda for a specific point of view, which just flies in the face of what those who created the FCC and the Radio Commission before it had in mind for American broadcasting. But it's something else, again, as you point out, to try to drive off of the air the few remaining sources of relatively unbiased, or at least alternative, let me say, points of view, so as to totally dominate the information and opinion and entertainment that's available. I'm very dependent upon the BBC. We get it on a local station. Well, I can get it on my laptop. I can get it on my iPhone. I can get it on but even on a local a radio station during the night from about 11 p.m. until 5 a.m. And, you know, the BBC is just wonderful.
But why don't we have one?
Detail about what's going on in countries that are not even mentioned as countries on American commercial broadcasting.
But why not have one here?
If you want to know what's going on in the world, you have to listen to BBC.
I know, but why can't we have something like the BBC here in this country? We have the best standard we have for journalism is the New York Times, which is a family-owned paper. The Guardian, by the way, which is owned by a trust, is the one that broke the Murdoch story and stuck with it. But here we don't have what we have is so weak, and it's been weakened by politicians, I think deliberately so. How could you create a kind of BBC equivalent that could, I mean, they talk about diversity in the press, and that's what Murdoch said yesterday. That's what Murdoch said in his testimony, that we have great diversity. Well, that's absolute nonsense. We don't. But so let's talk about a way to create a kind of a BBC alternative in this country.
Well, you're right. The diversity that we have is Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. And you ask, why can't we have something like the BBC in the United States? Well, you might also ask, why can't we have universal single-payer health care like the major industrial nations of the world do? And it all comes full circle back to what we were talking about earlier. Well, where somebody running for the United States Senate every day knows that they've got to somewhere come up with $10,000 cash before the sun sets. 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year for 6 years. Their job really is to raise lots of cash. And where it comes from are the folks who expect what, in my research, indicates it ends up being a 1,000-to-1 return on their investment. You give $1 million to a political party for its national convention or to the national party as distinguished from individual candidate, and you'll get $1 billion in return of, you know, maybe it's tariffs or tax breaks or price subsidies or they're all kinds of defense contracts, they're antitrust exemption. There are all kinds of things the government can do, most of which take taxpayers' money, but not all of which take taxpayers' money. Some just permit you to go on doing what you were doing, like BP and its dangerous conditions on the offshore drilling rig, or Massey Coal. It has over 700 citations for unsafe conditions, and the regulatory agency never did anything about it. Well, that's worth millions and billions of dollars to corporations to be able to run roughshod over the law. Or as I used to say, the problem is not so much that corporations violate the law, it's that the corporations write the laws. But as we see with the Murdoch operation, they're violating the laws as well as writing the laws. So that's the problem. As long as you've got the best government money can buy, and that's your driving force, you're not going to have universal single payer. You're not going to have the equivalent of the BBC.
Well, just in closing, then let's try and figure out that the BBC, of course, is immune from political influence because their funding comes from people who buy licenses every time they buy a TV or a radio, and it's insulated them. Is there a mechanism or is there a way to use the internet? Because people are searching out for the truth. I think people know. I mean, look at Jon Stewart. He's one of the most popular broadcasters around, and his job is to show how absurd the news is.
And?
Well, I'm saying that indicates to me that there's an audience for an alternative to corporate media.
Well, although his is also corporate.
It is corporate.
Let it be known. But, yeah, I think their audience is out there. And one of the things that you're seeing that is sort of a hopeful sign is that even journalism abhors a vacuum. And as the newspapers, the hard copy newspapers, are taking a hit and cutting back on their reporters and so forth, you are seeing some things spring up in terms of community news services and foundation-funded operations and independent research and journalism producing organizations that aren't actually publishing hard-copy newspapers, but they're making copy available to papers that want to use them. So maybe we'll get more and more of that, plus the amount of material that's available on the Internet in the form of blogs or something like Huffington Post, where you have lots of people contributing at least opinion and in many cases independent reporting as well.
Well, I thank you for joining us here, Nicholas Johnson. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Give me the call letters on your station.
It's KPFK Los Angeles.
KPFK?
Yeah, KPFK.
Oh, Pacifica.
Yeah, it is Pacifica, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay, yeah. Well, good for you.
Yeah, no. We're responsible for the seven terrible words, remember?
Oh, yes. No, I did a lot with Pacifica over
right.
the years.
Right.
All
well,
right. Well, you know, listen, I wish you and I thank you for calling, and I hope we've said something that you can use. Tell your listeners to hum along with us.
All righty. Let me.
You realize you Australians are responsible for getting this guy started in the first place.
Hey,
I think you have some confession to make to your.
I
listeners.
Do. I do. I got to expiate here. Anyway, I got to wrap up here. So thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And again, I was speaking then with Nicholas Johnson, who was a commissioner on the Federal Communications Commission from 1966 to 1973. He's the author of How to Talk Back to Your Television Set and Your Second Priority, a former FCC commissioner speaks out. He currently teaches at the University of Iowa College of Law. So what do we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with, I thought, a very interesting economist, and his name is Matthias Venango. He comes from Argentina. He's very familiar with Argentina's debt and default. And, of course, we're talking about the possibility of the Greece defaulting. He thinks it's not an if, but a when, and that they will default. And the real question is, will it be an orderly default or a disorderly one that will drag down the Eurozone with it and, by extension, American banks and slow down and the so-called recovery? And he pretty much thinks it'll be the latter because the politicians simply are not capable. They don't have the power against the power of these banks, which we certainly saw back in 2008 with the Wall Street meltdown. It really is a global problem that these bankers can make terrible loans and the lenders are made whole. The borrowers, whether they're dictators or corrupt governments or just idiots, sometimes are held responsible. Mostly they're not. But at the end of the day, it's always the poor people that get squeezed and are forced to clean up the mess. And there's no better example of what's happening in Greece today. He thinks that Greece eventually will have to leave the Eurozone. And but he gave a very, very good analysis of tying in lots and lots of other things to make this quite a big picture in terms of how finance has taken over the globe, and this too big to fail elite of bankers truly is running the world. I know it sounds conspiratorial, but I'm afraid he makes a pretty good case. Then we spoke with Ethan Rome, who's the executive director of Healthcare for America Now. It's a public interest group that is defending the much maligned healthcare reform bill. We talked about this so-called gang of six senators, $3.7 trillion deal that they're calling for. And of course, the president's $4 trillion deal that he wants. And in both cases, we don't know a lot about how much Obama was prepared to give away with Medicare and Social Security. But in the so-called the gang of six senators, it's pretty clear what they want to do. And Ethan Rome really did make a good case of how devastating it would be for the Democrats to agree to this. In effect, the Republicans could run against them in the next election saying, the Democrats sold out Social Security and Medicare. It's almost incomprehensible that they would do that. But apparently, this is the deal in the name of bipartisanship. And of course, they're being bipartisan because, oh, we've got to deal with the debt issue, you know. Well, the debt issue is a phony one. It's entirely created by the Republicans who have created this economic hostage crisis. And it's like the Stockholm syndrome, where they torture you and then you end up being nice to the torturers. Very strange. And then we talked with the former commissioner of the FCC, Nicholas Johnson, and he was so interesting and so wise. We talked initially, of course, about Rupert Murdoch, the too big to fail media mogul who doesn't know what's going on inside his company. At least that's the testimony he gave. And Nicholas Johnson really does. He says, you know, we really, it all comes down to the fact that we've got the best government money can buy, and that that not only do the have we allowed these people to take over the media, but they also are picking our politicians and deciding who gets elected and who does not. And he feels that it's time for the people, way past that time for the people, to wake up and take, not just take back their media, but take back their country as well. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I would like to thank my producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. Our theme music is One Time, One Night by Los Lobos. You can hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. I'll be back tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.